from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, first we get an update on yesterday's rains and high winds, which have caused flooding and traffic problems throughout the region. Then we discuss President Trump's pick for National Security Advisor, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. Known for his counterinsurgency expertise, McMaster will assume the post following the forced resignation of General Michael Flynn last week. It's all ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. We're going to spend this hour talking about President Donald Trump's pick for National Security Advisor, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. But first, we want to get an update on the storms that have been causing flooding, mudslides, traffic snarls, power outages, and other headaches throughout Northern California. And among the problems, a levee break along the San Joaquin River prompted an evacuation order yesterday for about 500 people near Manteca. Crews have stabilized the breached levee, but the evacuation order remains in place. And in San Jose this morning, as many as 20 people trapped on a flooded golf course right next to Coyote Creek are being rescued by the San Jose Fire Department. Joining us to talk about the storm is meteorologist Jan Null, who is with the Golden Gate Weather Services. And welcome, Jan Null. Good to have you back with us.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. Where were we, and are we out of the woods?
Well, I think we're out of the woods as far as any of the heavy precipitation, though with all the flooded creeks and streams and rivers, that water is still working its way down into some trouble areas. You mentioned the area along Coyote Creek as Anderson Reservoir continues to be over the top and coming down the spillway. That's, you know, is basically an uncontrolled release now through up Coyote Creek, up the east side of the Santa Clara Valley, and that's why we have those ongoing rescues.
And let's look to the south a bit, because the neighborhoods in Carmel and Salinas and Royal Oak actually were all evacuated.
Right, yeah, we have the, you know, the rainfall from the past 24 hours, which was generally 2 to 4 inches. There were some areas that were 6 to 10 inches, but generally 2 to 4 inches were good solid numbers, but with everything already bank full and everything saturated, all this water is, you know, is over the banks in lots of communities.
Although receding in Oroville, we should say, but now there's heavy snow up in Lake Tahoe, right?
Well, and actually it has just turned from rain back to snow, so that's a good thing up in that area, but the Sierras are going to be a mess for another 24 hours.
And do you know about the Don Pedro Spillway? I mean, it was open for the first time in 20 years, I believe.
Yeah, and what Don Pedro feeds into the Tuolumne River, which goes through Modesto. And Modesto right now is at flood stage, which is 55 feet there. As that crest from that release gets into town here later this morning, that's going to go up to 61 feet. So it's going to go, in a very short period of time, 5 feet above flood stage. And so we will obviously see flooding in Modesto, and then as that crest works its way on down the Tuolumne up toward that Manteca area, we'll also see additional rises in that area. So it's this sort of this slow-moving train wreck in some of these areas as these huge amounts of water come down from the Sierra and all converge into the vicinity of the Delta.
And by the way, I had mentioned earlier, Jan Null's with us for just a few minutes because we're going to be talking about the appointment to the National Security Advisory Committee by President Trump. He named Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. In the meantime, some of you may want to weigh in here about what you've been encountering in the flooding and in, really these terrible conditions that we've had as a result of rain. Wasn't that long ago we were talking about the drought here on Forum and sympathizing and certainly wringing our hands about it, but now lots of water and water just about everywhere. If you've had some experiences with just even streets being closed or flash floods or, you know, whatever you'd like to report in terms of your own experience, we'd certainly like to hear from you in the few moments we have. And that toll-free number is available. It's 866- 833-6786. You can join us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, if you'd like to give us your own report, as it were. And you can also email us, forum at kqed.org, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. What's the forecast, Jan?
Well, you know, we are going to continue to have the showers ramp down during the course of today. By late in the day, we should have some patches of blue sky around the Bay Area. On through the remainder of the week and into Saturday, it will be mostly dry. It might be a scattered mountain shower or something like that. But the next rain moving into the Bay Area and then on into the Sierra will be Saturday night into about Monday morning. And that system looks more of a garden variety type system, no huge amounts of water in it, and I think the impacts will be minimal. But in the context with everything being saturated, you know, we have a lot of hillsides that are just sort of barely hanging on, and that one more drop of water can be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
And of course, thousands were without power, and there were actually hundreds of flight delays and canceled airline. But, you know, the thing is that's really kind of positive in all this, the pulling together, especially in a place like Tracy. The river rising reports came down. The San Joaquin River was at a dangerous level, and people really came together.
Right, and I saw an example yesterday in the Santa Cruz Mountains. A tree fell across the Highway 17, and a lot of people got out their chainsaws and had it cut up, and the road opened even before Caltrans could get there.
Well, at this point, we are out of the worst of it from the sounds of it, you think?
Right. It will be some localized areas that will continue to have problems. Again, Coyote Creek is particularly critical because Anderson is going to continue to dump for several more days. So I think that's probably one of the bigger problem areas. And then with the hillsides can slide for several days after it stops raining. And any wind with a lot of these trees that are rooted into very soft, soggy ground now, we'll see some more of those coming down and some power outages due to that.
We're talking with Jan Null. He's with us by phone this morning, and he's certified consulting meteorologist with the Golden Gate Weather Services, former lead forecaster for the National Weather Services, and he's been a Bay Area meteorologist for over 40 years. Wondering where we are in terms of the drought, Jan. We've had, I guess now we've exceeded the entire rainfall season's normal rainfall. We've had the heaviest rainfall.
Aaron, are you there?
Jan, do we?
Yeah. I'm here.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just asking you where we are with the drought now with all this heavy rainfall.
You know, I think for most of the state, we are pretty much out of the drought. There are still some groundwater issues in the San Joaquin Valley and maybe some isolated spots in Southern California. But the amounts of water we have and flowing into the reservoirs, I think most of those concerns are alleviated. So it now goes from a meteorological and hydrological problem now to a political problem and a declaration.
And the levees?
Levees are very precarious. They are saturated. We saw that boil develop on the levee near Manteca yesterday that has a lot of people concerned, especially with that flow from the Tuolumne. And you know, it won't take much for some of this higher water as it reaches those levees for it to be a potential trouble spot.
Jen, I thank you so much for your reporting. Always good to have you on. I appreciate it. That's Jan Null. And Jan Null, again, is a certified consulting meteorologist with the Golden Gate Weather Services, former lead forecaster for the National Weather Service. And as promised, we're going to talk now about the recent appointment by President Trump yesterday of Army Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster as National Security Advisor. McMaster will assume the post vacated last week by General Michael Flynn, who was forced to resign for misleading Vice President Mike Pence about his discussions with Russia's ambassador. McMaster is known in military circles as a warrior scholar, and he comes to the position with command and counterinsurgency expertise and with a reputation for questioning authority. I want to discuss his appointment and how it may shape U.S. foreign and national security policy. And joining me is Michael Nock, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. And Mike Nock, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is an appointment that lots of people are cheering, Republicans and Democrats. And I think a lot of it has to do perhaps with not only this guy being fairly substantial in terms of character, but There are problems, obviously, that I want to get into with you that lay ahead for him. But what's your assessment of the man?
Well, from everything I've read and understand, all of the accolades that have been heaped on his appointment are justified. I mean, he has this sterling background. He's been a heroic officer in combat on multiple occasions. He's highly decorated, but he's also, as is widely publicized now, the author of a major book following his doctoral dissertation from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, on the period in 1963 to 65 when critical decisions about U.S. Vietnam policy were made. And he's very critical of the of not only of the civilian leadership, Johnson, McNamara, and others, but also of the senior military for not standing up to the civilians.
And in fact, that dissertation talks about the Joint Chiefs of Staff in pretty critical ways as well. It's called Dereliction of Duty. It was published as a book. In fact, he's got a reputation not only as an intellectual and a scholar, but also as someone who is willing, like when he was playing a role in counterinsurgency, every time he said, "You disrespect an Iraqi, you're working for the enemy."
Yes, that's right. No, he's definitely iconoclastic, and maybe that's one of the reasons why he was twice passed over for promotion to one-star general. Very unusual to be passed over twice for one-star general and then still be in active duty years later as a three-star general. And so I think almost unheard of.
He was even, according to reports, giving detainees in Iraq forms to fill out about how they could have been treated better and that sort of thing. So a lot of this may show iconoclasm. It may indeed reveal even a kind of defiance. But he's got his challenges cut out for him, Michael Nacht. I mean, he probably want to bring in his own people, and can he get that? That was a problem with his predecessor who was named.
That's one of the initial questions to wait and see. Obviously, Admiral Harwood was greatly negatively influenced about the job by his inability to get that assurance from President Trump. Now we'll see. I don't know whether General McMaster demanded that or requested it, and if so, we'll see if it is it's followed up. But that's very important to the KT McFarland is the current deputy. She was a Fox Network commentator and a supporter of President Trump, but also of Michael Flynn. I think if she retains her post as deputy, that will be an initial indicator that he's not bringing in solely his own people. But we'll have to wait and see on that. The other key thing is the composition of the National Security Council and whether Mr. Bannon will retain his membership on it, as well as Rance Priebus, whether he will be just in the room or in the back of the room, or will he be a formal member, and whether they'll restore the membership of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Dumford, and the director of national intelligence, Dan Coats.
I thought the Bannon appointment was in cement. Are you saying that it may not be?
Well, I'm just speculating that the combination of Bannon and Priebus's appointments as permanent members to the National Security Council and the placement of the DNI and the chairman as members invited when their expertise is required, that's been a major issue since it was announced. So because it conveys a sense of a politicization of the NSC, which is not what it's intended for.
That's significant that President Trump passed on John Bolton, isn't it?
Yes, although I see now that there are continued stories that Bolton may receive a different appointment in the Trump administration. I think Bolton is very smart and very charismatic, and my impression is that President Trump is impressed by him. But he's very outspoken. He's been a core neoconservative figure for a long time. And already such Republicans as Rand Paul have said that they would never support his appointment for a Senate-confirmed position, which would suggest that Bolton would get maybe some other White House appointment. I think the reason perhaps why President Trump chose General McMaster – over Bolton for this position is that this position really is to be an honest broker. Some of the most effective national security advisors have been Brent Scowcroft, for example, and others who have really tried to make sure that all points of view are heard, and that's not been a strength of Mr. Bolton's.
We're talking with Michael Nock, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley and former assistant secretary of defense for global strategic affairs. We also have Kevin Barron on the line with us from the nation's capital. He's executive editor of Defense One, which is an Atlantic media publication focusing on global security and defense. And he's also a national security analyst for NBC News and MSNBC. And welcome, Kevin Barron. Good to have you.
Thank you. How are you?
Okay. There's low morale in the NSC. And can McMaster's lift that up to some degree, do you think, since everybody seems so keen on his appointment?
Well, you would think so. It's been a real rocky month. If you think of the NSC as an organizational body that has direction over both policy but also in executing things like the war on terrorism and what's going on in Iraq and Syria, it's a group that needs leadership, and it's also a group that the military is looking toward to see how much they're going to be involved in the day-to-day operations. It's a real shift from how Obama's NSC worked, and the turmoil hasn't been good for anybody.
Well, the job really in the NSC, the job that Lieutenant General McMaster's will essentially fulfill will be coordinating departments and agencies which counsel the president on foreign policy and military operations. He seems to have a very strong background, certainly in terms of his military experience and counterinsurgency, but since 2014, he's been director of the Army Capabilities Integration Center, which is at Fort Eustis, Virginia. How does that tie into the NSC, or does it?
Well, it kind of doesn't. McMaster's got an interesting rise to fame. In a way, you could say the same thing about how General Flynn or General Petraeus came up, in that they made a name for themselves with some sort of counter, conventional wisdom argument, in Flynn's case about the intelligence in Afghanistan, and Petraeus' case about how to fight the Iraq war and whether or not to have the surge again. And then they became known as these intellectual generals quite quickly before anybody knew much more about them. The difference with McMaster is he's really spent a lot of time in Washington. He's very familiar on the think tank circuit. He's very well known to reporters. So at one sense, his career path was perceived to be perhaps blocked or held back by other generals who didn't like his outspokenness and kept him from a more traditional command of, say, lead the 82nd Airborne, lead the 101st, go become a combatant commander. And instead, he's a paper writer. He's a thinker. And so he gets sent to TRADOC, the Training and Doctrine Command, where, that's what they do. They lay out the strategies for fighting wars. So him coming into the NSC, I view him as strictly a guy who's meant to manage that agency. You're not managing all the others, but you're managing the thought. You're managing the strategy. And at the same time, he is deferential to Generals Mattis and Kelly. These are, much more senior, four-star commanders. This is not a guy who can come to the NSC and be a policy leader who is telling General Mattis what to do. Just the opposite.
Well, this is also someone who talked about the efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan as having been tainted at times by narcissism, and who has given talks in which he's pretty much talked about threats. Talk, for example, the Center for International and Strategic Studies. He singled out North Korea as an enemy state and talked about Iran and the problems there and ISIS, and also about the importance of allies. Which struck me because he was also speaking, I should mention, about land force capacity. But the importance of allies is something that some feel that President Trump doesn't necessarily take into great account, especially NATO allies.
Right. So I think this might help flush out more of Trump's thinking and how much Trump is going to actually lead any national security and especially war strategy and movements, or how much Trump is just going to listen to these guys and nod his head and say, okay, do that. I mean, Trump's been all over the place. He says he's a non-interventionist, but he wants to, you know, take out and destroy ISIS faster than Obama did. The problem with that is that a lot of people agree with how Obama was executing the war on terrorism. And McMaster agrees with a lot of it. You know, he's just like most any senior general in the United States military, and that he prefers training local forces, doing what's called buy with and through, having political end state solutions before you commit large forces. But he's also a bit of a critic of how Obama was a little too antiseptic, was the word, you know, too much relying on surgical strikes and elite special operators, kind of leaving a bit of a void when there could have been a little bit more American involvement. So I'm one of the Washington watchers and reporters who thinks there's not a whole lot of wiggle room for major changes of strategy here. And what McMaster brings to the table are lessons from those Iraq and Afghanistan wars. As you mentioned, you know, that narcissism, you know, he's not a fan of the idea that America can go in and remake a country like Iraq, remake a country like Afghanistan, much less the entire region. But there is a lot that the United States can do and should do with its military, particularly if the strategy is there and is solid and has buy-in.
Kevin Barron, again, is executive editor at Defense One. He's with us from Washington, D.C. Michael Nacht is with us from Berkeley. He's professor of public policy there and former assistant secretary of defense. I'm wondering, Michael Nacht, a lot of attention has been paid to Craig Deere, who was serving as a NSC senior director for Western Hemispheric Affairs. A lot of attention because he was dismissed after criticism of President Trump and Steve Bannon from behind closed doors, I should add, for lack of access. That seems to loom on the horizon here, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, on the one hand, you cannot be a member of the NSC and speak in a public forum, even if it's behind closed doors, identifying individuals and criticizing a process. That has to be done within the White House itself. So in that sense, I think his dismissal or return to the National Defense University is not that surprising. But it does highlight this continuous issue of both access and also that other power centers, including the president himself, could change policy in a second without any prior consultation with the NSC. And we've already, just a few examples, we've seen President Trump make statements at the Netanyahu visit about Israel and the Palestinians and going from a two-state to maybe a one-state solution. That doesn't appear to have gone through any process. Perhaps Jared Kushner, the son-in-law, gave him advice on that. So that's an example where something could happen. The president could make a statement at a press conference with a world leader, and that will be the first time that the general will know that there's been a policy shift. So that's one issue, the way the president can individually change policy without going through the normal channels, which so far has been his modus operandi. Now, maybe it'll change, but there's no evidence so far.
All right, I'm going to have to jump in here because we're coming up on a break, but I want to give a phone number to you, our listeners, to comment on the appointment of Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, President Trump's new national security advisor, and your thoughts, your reflections, your input, but also your questions and comments. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. You can join us now toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post questions or comments there, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum.